Rolling.
This is the FedSoc Films Podcast,
where we continue the conversation sparked on film.
Quiet on set.
You want to know what freedom tastes like? It tastes like this beer.
Take one.
This is, in fact, the classic solution in search of a problem.
Action.
That cannot help but be controversial.
Cut.
With expert discussion and analysis.
With the greatest legal minds on the topic today.
The FedSoc Films Podcast.
It's a wrap.
There is no place like Nebraska. Dear old Nebraska, you, where the girls are the fairest, the boys are the squarest of any old place that I knew. There is no place like Nebraska, where they're all true blue, and we'll all stick together in all sorts of weather for dear old Nebraska, you.
Welcome back to the FedSoc Films Podcast. I'm Ann Hartley, your Cornhusker host. As a part of our series on laboratories of democracy, where we explore the unique features of state constitutions, we created a film exploring the origin of Nebraska's nonpartisan unicameral legislature. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Laura Ebke of the Platt Institute. She's a former Nebraska state senator and a mother of three. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks, Anne. Glad to be here.
Fantastic. We're glad to have you. So let's start with the big question. How many Nebraska football games have you attended?
Oh, gosh. I've probably not as many as most Nebraskans. I've attended probably, 8 or 9 in person over the years. But I've watched a lot on TV, of course.
I definitely have some very fond memories growing up of watching the Cornhuskers with the family. And we had the bad call brick that got thrown at the TV screen whenever we disagreed. It was great fun.
I remember sitting through several games while my husband was in school. We went to several, seemed to be the late season games when it was snowing, and we were sitting, you know, in Lincoln in the snow watching Oklahoma or Kansas State, you know, run out onto the field back in the good old days.
Exactly. It's fascinating how big of a deal college football is in the state.
It's a huge deal in Nebraska, I think in large part because we don't have any professional teams, you know, and we have one big college, you know, go south to Kansas, and they have both K-State and the University of Kansas. Iowa has Iowa State and the University of Iowa. We have the University of Nebraska is pretty much it.
Exactly. I absolutely love the joke that the Cornhusker football team is the state religion.
Pretty close. Which I guess makes, Tom Osborne, you know, the former coach, sort of our minor deity, at least.
He did end up serving as governor, didn't he?
Well, he wasn't governor. He was in Congress. He served in Congress for a couple of terms. He ran for governor, and everybody was kind of surprised when he lost to Dave Heineman.
Ah, there we go. It is funny how you see that overlap, though.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's something you see every day.
No. Probably a good thing.
Fair enough. So I wanted to talk with you today about the major influences on Nebraska's political culture. And it seems that football is an interesting place to start.
Football is certainly a good place for us to start because that's where we can find some common, you know, some common ground. I think if you look at Nebraska political culture, you have a certain urban-rural divide. We talked about that when I was in the legislature a lot, about how the rural senators, you know, were on one side of things and the urban senators had a totally different view. So you have that even within the larger culture. As a political scientist, I would say that you have in kind of the rural areas, you have sort of a conservative populism, which seems a little strange, but I think that's a longstanding description. You have in the Lincoln area, you have a different dynamic because you have both, you know, the state's major university and the center of state government. So you have sort of a different dynamic going on there. And then you have Omaha, which I think you're more familiar with, but I would say that, you know, it's typical of a lot of urban areas where you have a lot of differences and diversity in terms of political culture, but if I had to describe it, it would probably be one of, you know, it's sort of a right of center, bigger business personality. So, you know, like a lot of states, we're very diverse, but because we have such a big agricultural dynamic in, you know, 3/4 of the state, it becomes more more potent, I think, for us to deal with.
It certainly is an interesting dynamic. Now, you mentioned that there's a surprising populist bent in Nebraska. Where do you think that comes from?
Well, I mean, I think it goes way back to probably the founding of the state. And you had a significant number of sort of urban people who'd come from Eastern Europe, sometimes Western Europe, you know, the kind of German, Czechoslovakian influence. And so there's a populism there. And then you get into the farming era of in the early 30s. And there were a lot of people who were very dependent during the Dust Bowl and the Depression on the aid that was given by government. So while a lot of the folks out west, out in the rural areas, and I live in a rural area, tend to be fairly conservative from a social standpoint. They aren't nearly as sort of anti-government, almost libertarian as you might imagine in some rural areas. You know, so when you think about Wyoming or, you know, Montana, and you think of sort of this libertarian impulse, you don't see quite as much of that out in Western Nebraska, I don't think.
That certainly is interesting. There seems like there's a little bit of a difference between the more rural areas and the urban areas, like you were saying there.
Yep, absolutely.
So I'm curious where the unicameral legislature fits into all of this.
Sure. It grew sort of out of that populist movement back in the 30s. George Norris, who was sort of the great populist, was our U.S. senator at the time. He's from out in McCook, Nebraska. And he was a U.S. senator and served in the served during the Roosevelt administration. And he was sort of this prairie populist, really. And he thought that it was important during a time of fiscal stress that we ought to think about, you know, having fewer members in the legislature. So that was part of it. He made this move to move to a one house system, and we changed our constitution. You know, the other piece of it is that just aside from pure cost, Norris, who had served in Congress and the Senate and the House before that, he didn't like the idea of the conference committees, you know, where you have to go through two houses and then they have to reconcile it through kind of this secretive conference process that, you know, that was the way he saw it anyhow. And so he thought if you did one house and it was open to the public, that would provide for better governance.
So it seems like there were two goals that he had there in creating the unicameral, which would have been efficiency and transparency. Do you think that's carried through?
I think for the most part, you know, I mean, I think we are in many ways more efficient. That could be a positive and that could be a negative, depending on, you know, how you look at things. You know, we are able to get things moved through the legislature without having to go to that second house. And so you don't have the sort of, I don't know, tempering attitude of a second house that might slow some things down. On the other hand, I think that we are incredibly transparent. People can walk through the Capitol with great ease. They can sit up in our balconies. They can contact their legislators. Each legislator represents less than 40,000 people, or right around 40,000 people now, I guess, with the new census. And so, you know, it's easy enough to find your representative and to get in touch with them. And, you know, I had on many occasions while I was in the legislature, I would be, you know, walking through the grocery store and someone would feel free to stop me and, you know, bend my ear a little bit. So I think that it's a valuable thing. And I think that, you know, we've managed to kind of keep the notion of a citizen legislator in place in Nebraska.
That is wonderful to hear. That sounds like a really interesting experience. Can you tell me more about what it was like to be a state senator?
Yeah, you know, I never, I was always kind of a political nerd, and I had served about 12 years in my on my local school board. And I was coming to the end of my third school board term, and my dad says, hey, why don't you run for the legislature? Well, I don't know. Thought about it a little bit and decided, well, if I was ever going to do anything else, this was a good time. My kids were all to the stage where they were fairly, you know, self-reliant and didn't need me around all the time. And so with my husband's blessing, we decided to go ahead and have at it. It was a lot of fun running in 2014. That was when I was elected. But it was a lot of fun because it was four counties, the one I lived in, the one I grew up in, which was just to the south of us, and then two that were neighboring counties. And got to reconnect with a lot of people, classmates from high school and things like that. And what you find is that when you have a relatively small, especially in the rural areas, I think you have a relatively small small constituency that people feel free to just, you know, have a chat with you. I spent more time at local coffee houses and donut shops and bars, just talking to folks about what they were interested in. And they always felt free to get back in touch with me after I was elected. I had a number of people who had me on, had my cell phone, and they'd be texting me while I was on the floor of the legislature asking me, what's going on right now? What is, you know, Senator so-and-so doing? So I'd be conducting these text messaging conversations, describing what actually was happening in the legislature, because they were watching it. They were watching it through PBS, through our NET network, and they could see what was happening, but they weren't really sure what was happening behind the scenes. So I was able to provide some of that. So I really enjoyed my 4 years in the legislature. I loved serving the people of my district, but it was a good thing to leave, I think, when I did as well.
Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, I think that the political environment changed during the 4 years that I was there, and I've really enjoyed my time at the Platt Institute. It's given me the opportunity to use my I've got a PhD in political science, and it's given me the opportunity to exercise my academic chops, if you will, in doing some research, and to kind of return to where I was before I went into the legislature. And have really just been good for me to be out. I know enough to be dangerous now where the legislature is concerned.
Gotcha. It does sound like a good change of pace.
It's been a really good change of pace for me. A little less stressful, a few less people calling me at home late at night and that sort of thing.
Gotcha. So for our listeners who are unfamiliar, can you explain what the Platt Institute is all about?
Sure. The Platt Institute is a public policy institute or a think tank that was created back in the about 2008 or 2009, I think. And it was founded with the idea that, we wanted to promote the ideas of free markets, sort of a generally small government, reducing barriers to entry for economic purposes. It started out as the Platt Institute for Economic Research, is how they referred to themselves, and it's kind of taken on just the Platt Institute moniker now, because we go beyond just economic research. We still do research, but we also look at other areas. Occupational licensing and regulatory reform are very important to what we do, but we also do a fair amount of tax policy research and so forth. But we are one of those evil think tanks, I guess.
Gotcha. Sounds like you guys cover a little bit of everything.
We do. We stay mostly out of what would be considered kind of the social issues, and do very little with education policy, except where it's directly related to tax policy. We want to expand opportunities for folks, and so we kind of look for opportunities to grow our footprint from that perspective. But occupational licensing, regulatory reform, and tax reform have been big drivers for us the last few years.
Gotcha. So I'm curious how that stacks up against that sort of conservative populist bent that you were discussing earlier on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for the most part, we have worked a lot on transparency as well. And I should have mentioned that. And that has taken us out into the larger state on a number of occasions. We had our Truth in Taxation bill last year that was passed that resulted in a number of Truth in Taxation hearings. So in other words, if property taxes were going to be increased by a certain amount, but by more than a certain amount, then it triggered an automatic Truth in Taxation hearing in the area. And that's one of the things that we've heard since before I was elected to the legislature in 2014, that property taxes are a major driver for us. It is a downer for the farmers, obviously, and the property holders, but as well for households. And so this Truth in Taxation expanded the level of transparency. It required a certain level of transparency and description of why the tax increases were going to be needed. And so we've been able to work within that sort of conservative populist movement on tax reform primarily. And we've been fairly successful at that. I think that the fact that we were based in Omaha probably has resulted in us being a little bit slower to get out into the western part of the state and to understand some of those kind of local concerns, but we're working on that.
It certainly is a big state, a lot of ground to cover.
There is a lot of ground to cover and a lot of space in between some of those cities.
No doubt about it. All right, so as we wrap up here, I want to take a step back just to look at the unicameral. What do you think is the greatest challenge facing it as an institution?
I think that The biggest challenge, you know, of course, we're a nonpartisan body. We're the only unicameral and nonpartisan body in the country. And I think that maintaining a level of nonpartisanship and keeping those 49 free actors, if you will, free agent actors in the mix as independent thinkers, not necessarily independent ideologues. But keeping it that way is going to be a challenge. I think that especially in an era when we seem to becoming increasingly divided politically, I think that that's going to be a special challenge. I think that the other thing is that, you know, we have to maintain that level of transparency and, you know, staying open to the public without letting things devolve. You know, we talked a little bit before the show about some of the interesting cases, the interesting issues that have been before the legislature this year. And that has resulted in a lot of discord, if you will. I think that it raises questions then about the rules of the legislature and how it's going to continue to function. There's also always a few people who think that we ought to go back to the old system. You know, our Capitol has two chambers in it. We could, in theory, in fact, the first year after the Capitol was built, or the first 2 years after the Capitol was built, we had two houses. And so, in theory, we could go back to two houses again. The question is whether or not the public wants to do that, and that would require a constitutional change. So, I think we've got plenty of challenges, but I think that on the whole, the positives of the Nebraska legislature, you know, every bill gets a hearing, you know, every senator has the same level of authority within the body, and the same rights. I think all of these things are on the whole a positive thing for the state.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Laura. This has been a very interesting discussion. I feel like I've learned a lot.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, folks, for giving us a listen. You can find our film, Laboratories of Democracy, Nebraska's Unicameral, on our YouTube channel or at fedsoc.org. That's FEDSOC.org. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. That's a wrap.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.